Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Quite Hollywood podcast. I'm John.
I'm Jamie.
And I'm August.
All right, who wants to start with a topic?
I don't want to start mine. I want to wait a little bit.
Okay.
Because I don't want to get pissed off right away talking about Disney.
Well, we're going to.
Really?
Because
I'm talking about the CG. I say CG, you guys say CGI.
There's a difference?
No.
It's all
okay.
It's all the same.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah.
Bitches and hoes.
So we're starting with my topic?
Yep.
All right. The topic I chose this week was the use of CGI in film. And how it's evolved through the years, how it's kind of overtaken
the film industry,
how it's used effectively. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because I am usually a pretty loud opponent against the use of CGI. I like it when it enhances a film, or when it's used minimally.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
like certain... when fake blood splatter.
Oh, not fake blood splatter.
Hey, drive.
Yeah.
There was fake blood splatter.
Okay,
I did not know.
Terrible.
Okay, that's fine.
Oh, yeah,
but like,
walking dead.
Horror movies, you gotta have the blood squibs. You have to have.
Oh yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Like nothing will top like when Ed 209 shoots that guy
in the
building in RoboCop. Like the blood that was coming. I'm like, that's the best thing I've ever seen. So yes, anyway, the reason I bring it up again was the Jungle Book, which was the movie I chose, kind of swayed me a little back towards, you know, not being a huge fan of CGI, but when it's done right, it looks amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I think when it's done horribly, which is so much I've seen over the last, like, 20 years in film.
Captain America!
Oh,
God. I'm sorry.
I don't want to bring that up. It takes you out of the immersion of the film, right?
Yeah.
Like, when something looks like it doesn't weigh anything, there's no weight to it.
Oh, yeah.
Or it's not really realistically responded to hitting something or moving or, you know, anything. It takes me out of it.
Oh, God.
So there is a...
it's like... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, there's something that reminded me of was Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Okay.
One of the most arduous movies to make.
Yeah.
So they did all of the acting on set with these, like, dolls, like, stand-ins that were about the same weight they... So, like, when, for example, when Bob Hoskins is saving Roger from the dip in the bar, he actually has, like, a rubberized Roger Rabbit bust to hold on to get the idea of weight. So, like, to get the feel of how he'd be for pushing back and that kind of thing, so...
And they knew that back then to do that.
Right.
And they don't do that much at all.
No.
Yeah.
So they did that. Then they shot the actors without the stuff in it. Then they went back after the movie's entirely done and added all the animation, which took another, God knows what, 8-9 months at least.
Okay.
And then ILM, speaking of CGI in a smart way, added like small stuff like the shine on Jessica Rabbit's dress.
Yeah.
Small effects adding complementing the cartoons.
Okay.
Fucking making three movies essentially.
Yeah.
As one. Like layering just like a normal cell, you know, animation would. But it was really cool because that was an example of CGI done right. But using real-world props to get a better, you know, not only eye line, but a feel of this person or this character being real in this world.
Yeah.
I like that kind of stuff.
Because to me, when it really pissed me off the most was a few years ago when I was trying to watch The Hobbit trilogy, which I only saw the first two. Seeing Legolas bounce around like he weighed nothing.
Like Yoda.
Yeah, Yoda, that pissed me off too. And it's... I'm like, who does this and then looks at it and says, this looks fine, let's put it out there for everyone to see.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just...
It never occurs to them.
I know, it's...
While editing, like,
yeah.
There's, you know, not just like CGI, but there's some times where I'll see an editing mistake. And I'll just be like, you didn't catch that?
You didn't catch that? You didn't think people like, would be like, that
really?
Looks stupid? You know?
Or yeah. Look... Like, I understand, you know, you get people in there, you're like, oh, you need to cut this, you know, this scene out because we got to, you know, reach this runtime or whatever. Mm. But not just like being able to work around it, like,
yeah,
finding some way.
And it comes from my history of, I love practical effects. I love, especially in horror movies, like practical gore effects, creature effects, the way like real light hits, and the way like moisture is on the characters, you know, because it looks, it's real, because it is real.
Yeah.
And trying to recreate that, every time I see it, it just pulls me out, and I just, all of a sudden, I know I'm watching a movie, and I know I'm watching something fake, and I know it's not there, and...
Well, that's one of the problems I have with Civil War. It's like, it looks like Captain America's team is practical effects team versus Iron Man, which is practically all the characters are CGI, and it's just like, there's not going to be any weight. There's no going to be gravitas to the fight, because they're just gonna be like, that's not a real actor in danger right there.
But it's not that they can't do it right. You know, that was the thing. But, because when I watched Deadpool, that action scene in the beginning, okay, where the guys are getting kicked out of the car and through the windows and stuff, and when the one guy falls out the back and he's getting drugged on the street and stuff, you know that wasn't all real. But it looked like it had weight, and it looked like it felt like that action was happening.
Well, maybe because like, the action was actually interesting.
Yeah.
Like, it was kind of fun to watch. I mean, you don't see, like, some getting plastered against the fucking road sign in Age of Ultron or something like that.
But it's also, but I mean, you look at, like, a Transformers movie and it just doesn't feel like there's any...
Oh, yeah, they just float all over.
It's just floating everywhere. It's...
That's, like, one of the things that really bothered me about those movies. Just, like, you don't see their impact on the world. Like... You don't see the pavement crumbling, you know, after their, like, bodies, you know, get impacted with it because someone threw them or, like, even stepping down really hard. It's like, you don't really see that.
And it's, to me, it's more of an injustice when, like, back to The Hobbit, when the original movies had real orcs.
The original creatures. Lord of the Rings, I remember watching The Hobbit, sitting in the theater going, how come a movie, a trilogy that came out over 10 years ago looks better?
Looks more real.
Looks more real than this. Because it was real. It was real guys in suits. So
like, it's like whenever they make, they'll eventually make the third Gremlins or whatever it's called, reboot, which pisses me off.
But
they'll probably be all CGI. Like, oh, great. Like, that was one of the things I loved about the Gremlins. Each Gremlin had its own personality and its own look.
And if they're smart, they will go back to practical effects.
I hope so.
Like, have you seen The Thing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Kurt Russell in The Thing.
Oh, yeah. Then I saw the remake, too.
Okay, so I was going to bring that up, because I didn't watch the remake, and there's a reason I didn't watch the remake. The practical effects in The Thing are one of my favorite ever.
Yeah.
I mean, you watch it today, and it looks horrifying, and it looks real.
Yep.
When they were doing the prequel Thing movie, they hired a practical effects company to do the same kind of practical effects, and they did the whole movie. And then executives in the studio jumped in at the end and replaced all of it with CGI effects, and it lost all of its,
you know, it looks so shitty.
It looks shitty. It's like, why would you fucking do that shit?
Especially after you filmed all that shit.
I know, and you paid these people, obviously, to do this.
Why waste more money to fix it, quote unquote?
Yeah. I think this has to do with, like, studios and stuff, like, just being so out of touch with what people really want to see. Because I would want to see a Thing prequel that had practical effects. That was the whole point to watching it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, to be honest, though, I don't think a lot of the audience knows what they want. I mean, I feel like it's a lot of executives being like, oh, I think they want this because we had a test audience and they like this and like that. So, blah, 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 blah. It was like, fuck test audiences.
It's like the lazy man's way around.
Yeah.
Because with practical effects, you're like, you're conceptualizing this entire movie, the characters, the design of each character, and like, then you have to build them. And then, you know, going back and forth with the director, producers, like, you finalize what that look is. It takes a little bit at first to get that look. But it's timeless, and it'll last forever compared to CGI, where you get to do whatever you want. There's a less creative, there's less of a creative direction.
Yeah.
And it just feels all like the sameness. Like, it looks all bland and same old crap, and it just sucks.
But you said you brought up a good point, the timelessness of it. Early movies that had early CGI, when you watch them now, you know what I mean? It's just like, ugh, it's cringeworthy. But you can take an old movie like Dark Crystal, okay, and you would watch it and you'd be like, this still looks fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, it reminds me of like video games. Like you can look at like sprites from like Nintendo, Super Nintendo. They still look amazing. You watch games from like, or play games from like PS1 era, and you're like, N64 or N64, you're like, oh my god, what garbage.
This is a chore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, and even going back as far as in the 70s, you know, when Mad Max first came out, like, holy shit, man, they're really driving these cars. Mm-hmm. They're really crashing this shit. And that's a big part of like why Mad Max Fury Road was such a big movie last year.
I'm glad you brought that up. Because there's a thing about Mad Max Fury Road, though. It does have CGI. It does.
Of course, but it's supplemental.
Like, well, no.
Besides, no. Well, there's the sandstorm. There's the sandstorm scene.
And I didn't actually like that scene.
I felt that's the one scene I don't like, is when the vehicle blows up and he goes tumbling around. Yeah. And I was just like, he'd be dead. I know you're suspending your sense of belief with this, but that was, I thought.
I don't know, I didn't like it because the majority of the film was practical.
Yeah, it was 80-something percent practical.
And it felt out of place. So, that scene felt
out of place. Exactly, and that's why
I didn't mind if there would be a storm that they're driving through, but when it was like the characters and the vehicles were interacting with, then it started feeling... Yeah.
I mean, it looked awesome. It looked beautiful. Like, I will not knock it for that. It's just like... If it had been like one of those regular movies where it had a lot of CGI, I'd be like, you know. Then again, I mean, maybe if it was the majority of it was CGI, I would have been just like, oh, this is just another CGI scene.
Yeah.
And not give a shit.
But I'm hoping, like, with Fury Road, that starts a trend where, you know, they could be like, this worked really well. Maybe we shouldn't, you know, discount practical effects or real stunt work or, you know.
Well, it's just like, I don't know. I'm not in the movie industry. But from, like, the layman's perspective, it doesn't seem cheaper to go to these CGI companies.
No.
No, I don't...
Them put, like, thousands of hours. Like,
oh, thousands. Per person, maybe.
Yeah.
Jesus, they have, like, hundreds of people working on, you know...
I mean, you know, just like want to find out the average, salary of people, of CGI artists.
And here's another thing, too.
Just be like, is that, like, a comparable price to, like, you know, someone creating a practical effect? Like, puppetry.
There's another thing, too, that with CGI, the artists who work on those, like, and this is a problem, obviously, but there's no recognition for them, right? They're just faceless drones.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas with practical effects, you had, like, superstars, like Nicotero, Berger. I mean, you had people who...
Tom Savini,
of course.
Amazing.
Stan Winston was good when he, you know...
Yeah.
Okay, that's
Rick Baker.
Jason Argonauts and...
Oh no, that's Ray Harryhouse.
That's Ray Harryhouse.
That too.
Yeah.
But they all had like their superstar status, not because of their like their stature, like they're famous, but because they were really good at what they did. They had a vision that shone through, like, you know, oh, that's Ray Harryhouse.
Yeah.
Without even like blinking an eye, you knew who it was.
Yeah.
And now it's scary because most of the effects nowadays, there are no names. There's no one taking over those mantles because practical effects are going away. I think they're coming back slowly, but...
And it's not even just with practical effects. It's like, I was listening to an interview with Don Bluth, known for, like...
American Tail,
like the Space Ace game, Dragon's Lair, Titan A.E.
No, okay.
He used to draw for Disney. And he said one of the greatest feelings he ever had was drawing an animated sequence on, like a notepad. And then being able to flip the pages and seeing it come to life.
Yeah.
He said it gave him, like, a rush, you know, and it was just like, it's art, it's his art, and he just realized. He says he visited, like, Pixar or somewhere where it was all just a bunch of people sitting in front of a computer screen, of course, just, you know, punching numbers together and dropping. And he said it was, like, the whole artistic feeling and, like, the creativity and everything just felt like it was gone.
Yeah.
Because it was just... computer-generated graphics. And then you're right about nobody stands out.
no,
as a unique artist in that field at all, you know.
Well, like, kind of like that ties into anime, just like the golden age of anime. Take
Miyazaki.
Miyazaki, Ghost in the Shell.
Oh, yep.
And compare that to like a lot of, you know, modern anime. I would say even I haven't watched like the new Ghost in the Shell, but it seems more of like the computer generated,
yeah,
rather than hand drawn. And just looks clunky.
Yeah.
Just like sometimes that CGI has too much polish.
Yeah.
It looks so polished and pristine that it's just like it sticks out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like it looks like shit.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's because that's not real world. Like, I look at this door right here. It's not completely white and just like perfectly pristine. I can see a little bit of texture in it when the light, where the light hits. I see some like black. I don't know if it's like mascara from the women that try to escape from your room. I'm not sure.
But it was originally,
it has character.
It was blood.
Oh,
and
right.
I covered it with something else. And there's a scratch mark.
To be fair, Sean did live here before.
That's right. Sean did have this room before I did.
It is pretty crusty. So it's been there a while.
Does he have like a door fetish where it's like...
No, you were right in the first time. You know?
Oh,
okay. Couldn't escape. They had to jump out the window.
Welcome to our podcast studio.
Yep.
But no, like, it doesn't have... It's so polished.
Mm. Yeah.
And
It's the difference between looking at a painting and looking at a person through a piece of glass. There's like this... Because a painting has that texture. When you get closer to it, it has that, like, those grooves and stuff. Whereas a person looking through the glass, it looks so real, but there's like this... There's this layer of veneer over it that kind of makes it look off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? There, I got it, bitch. What the fuck?
Okay, yeah. No, well, just like looking at a person through a piece of glass, I'm just like... Okay.
Yeah.
But now I get it. Like, you don't get that texture.
Right. So is there a chance that it'll ever come back? I mean, is this hopefully coming back around? The practical effects, I mean?
I don't know. Because it's not dependent upon the audience. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's dependent upon...
Well, what it's going to become dependent on, which is what's been happening with a lot of studios, is the amount of money it costs to do good CGI.
Yeah.
And if it's not done right, it of course looks like crap. But the amount that these like studios have to pay to get this CGI, they end up not making back the money that they invested in the film because they had to pay so much for the CGI.
Yeah.
We talked about Life of Pi earlier. That company like went bankrupt after Life of Pi, even though everyone was like, this was some of the greatest CGI we've ever seen. It's like, well, even if it was too expensive because the company's now out of business because they couldn't recoup the cost that they did. I think maybe if studios are back into a corner to the point where they're like, maybe we have to go back to a lot of practical effects.
Well, it's kind of similar, though, to you have like this idea where eventually the CGI is going to get so good that you won't need practical effects, but like how people are bringing back like the 2-bit, or the sprite gameplay, like, and here's a side-scrolling RPG, now they're doing ukulele, here's a 3D platformer, people are going to come back and bring in their projects the practical effects back, you know what I mean, in a smaller form.
Okay.
Because again, the reason, again, I, going back to the Jungle Book, only Disney could pull that off.
Yeah.
Yep.
They have
the pockets.
They have they have the pockets to do it. No other companies would be able to do something that looked like that.
A24?
That'd be great. Man, A24. They can do whatever they want.
They're the ones who do like Room and Witch,
everything. They do like
an indie.
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina. That's a great use of CGI in such a way that did not pull you out of the film.
I know. Believe that was rotoscoping. Like the old school technique.
Was it
where rotoscoping? They take shit out. Like that was an old school technique they used to take out Ava's like body parts and make her look... She was really there. It's pretty fucked up, man. Really? Well, she was really there, alright.
She's... Oh god, the scene where she's like putting the skin on her robotic...
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Just like, damn. Because she was naked, man.
No, no,
she's just gonna like fuck a robot.
I mean, that's not gonna cut my dick off. Larson, like, it's fulfillment of fantasies. I mean, but anyways,
next week's topic: which robot would you fuck?
Which robot? R2.
Major.
You have so many. You have so many vents and points.
You don't even have to think about that. Oh, no. It's like I have been thinking about it. Beep all night.
I'm gonna show you the next piece of the map. Fuck down.
Little really deep, like depressive beeps.
Major Mokoto.
Yeah, the day
this is a robot. But anyways,
yeah, the day I see Gremlins rebooting them, I'm gonna fucking like go nuts. It's one of the biggest reasons why I didn't like Krampus that much. It was like a lot of CGI shit. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I didn't see that. Like.
Had such potential.
Yeah. Wasn't it like three different Krampus movies that came out that year? Because like Krampus all of a sudden became a thing that everyone was talking about.
It's weird. Yeah.
It was almost like a meme, and it was just all of a sudden, like, you gotta make a bunch of Krampus movies.
Krampus.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not so, I mean, I'm not gonna talk about Santa. I'm gonna talk about Krampus. You know, I'm gonna wait for Krampus to leave my presence, not Santa. You know.
But, so when Jungle Book comes out in Blu-ray, it's going to have a lot of shelf space at Walmart.
Mm.
Don't fucking get me started on this.
This is the point. Let's go.
The ire. All right. So my topic is about fuck Disney. Just in general, fuck Disney. You know, my movie that I chose is Calvary, and fuck Disney. So
I heard Disney's doing a musical remake of Calvary.
Musical fuck. They can remove all the suicide and the dark humor behind that.
The beautiful score.
I'm not going to kill you in a week. I'm just going to test your faith and reinstore it in a week.
I'll just turn myself in.
I'm the hipster of the group, so yeah. Of course I'm going to say fuck Disney.
But why fuck Disney?
Why fuck Disney? Because they have monopoly upon shelf space. And I didn't pay attention the last time I went to Walmart, but it was the release day.
Okay.
When they were like stocking the shelves or whatever at Walmart, the movie section, they had that front end cap is I guess what it's called. Like that's the one, like that's what people see first. Like that's where all their direction is directed towards. That entire thing was filled with Star Wars The Force Awakens.
You don't say.
I don't fucking say. I do say. It was just filled with, like, you know, DVD, Blu-ray, just every single space. And then 2 feet from that, there's this gigantic, you know, 3D cardboard pop-up filled with Star Wars Force Awakens. And then, like, 2 steps from that, there's, like, a BB-8 little cardboard pop-up filled with Star Wars Force Awakens. And it just pissed me off because it's like it was just so much Star Wars Force Awakens in that little spot. And it's like you got 2 big-ass pop-ups. Why are you taking up this end cap where you can have other movies like fucking Room? You can have Room there where nobody knows anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
You could have all these other smaller films. You know, hell, even some of the other blockbuster movies there.
But here's my thing. One, why is a hipster shopping at Walmart? And two, do you think the type of people that go to Walmart are looking for Room?
No, they're not looking for Room. Like,
now,
I
gotta say though, we do have a local, like indie kind of video game, chain video game movies and stuff like that.
Bull Moose,
which is amazing.
Yes,
yep. Shout out to Bull Moose.
Did Bull Moose have a lot of space?
we'll
set aside for.
They kind of did.
I didn't see. I did.
I had a couple of stand ups.
They did. They had some stand ups. They didn't have a stand up of all the Room.
Just a little aside, Bulmus will do a promotional if you'll help fund this podcast.
I do all my shopping at Bulmus.
I would literally
do all my shopping. I would do all my shopping at Bulmus. But anyways,
so...
But, like, did it take up at Bulmus? At this Bulmus that we're talking about, there's that wall where they have the new releases.
Yep.
was every single space filled with Star Wars Force Awakens.
Here's the thing.
It was filled with Star Wars stuff.
They had a lot of Star Wars...
Sorry.
Duh! It's okay. They had a lot of Star Wars as Force Awakens on the wall, on the new release wall. They also had a couple pop-ups when you first entered the door. But that's just smart business. Like, that's what Walmart's doing, too.
Yeah, I understand.
I mean, yes, one of the stand-ups, the pop-up, the cardboard cutouts, right? They were in the aisle, off the side of the movie section.
Both of them were, yeah.
Right. People are going to walk by, oh, Star Wars, pick it up. It's a more of a subconscious thing to get those mom and pops who are using their food stamps to buy food to use the only money they have to buy Star Wars instead of buying, you know, like heroin.
Like diapers for their kids.
Diapers. Who fucking cares about diapers, right?
We need diapers. We got Star Wars.
Exactly. Just take the DVD, like, paper cover out and just, like, yep. That's a fucking diaper.
Here's the digital download. Put it in your butt.
I mean, Jesus Christ, there probably was Star Wars diapers. I mean, like,
oh yeah,
my kid shed on Kylo Ren's face.
Dude, I shed on Kylo Ren's face.
Can we? His luscious hair. That's another story.
His luscious.
So I mean, I think like especially with Bull Moose, like they have to. I mean, you're buying a lot of Star Wars Force Awakens to sell them. People are gonna go there looking for it. If you have 100 of them, they're gonna be gone in a fucking 10-minute window, and then you have no more to sell, so they'll go elsewhere. So Walmart doesn't need, obviously, that many, but they're anticipating to sell a lot. And Bull Moose did need that many, probably, you know.
I kind of wish that I didn't have a wife so I could just stand there and just see, like, how many, if they, like, ever ran out of DVDs right there. Just because, like, leading up to the DVD release, every fucking person in the world knew about Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
So then why do they need to have that monopoly on all the shelf space? If they know they have it. If you have two fucking pop-ups, why do you have to take that end cap where that's like one of the first places that people look for the new releases?
Mm-hmm.
If you have two pop-ups, why do you have to have all of them? That's my thing. Can you guys explain that to me? Like, other than volume and trying to sell volume.
I think it's overkill. It is. But it's funny because, like, you know, when release day comes out, of whatever movie it is or a game or whatever have you, there's a big rush. Sometimes there's midnight releases for that kind of stuff. So I remember one night when going to Bull Moose. Bull Moose is awesome.
And we're really going for that promotion.
Bull Moose.
We'll just send him this podcast.
It's just subliminal now. We're just going to be like,
our advertising space is just going to say Bull Moose.
Bull Moose.
Bull Moose.
Bye. Consume. Obey. I went to the midnight pickup of The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
I know. And it was funny because, like, I was there. A couple of people were there. I was like 15 people for midnight release, which is whatever. And there was one guy, I'm going to buy a CD. Like, so the majority of people...
I love this people.
I know, right? I'm just going to pick up this R.E.M. album because, you know...
Halo 5's releasing. I'm just going to pick up Animal Crossing.
Right. Wild World. To the majority of people, and what in that case, the 99% of people were looking for that film. So on release day, people looked for that film. They may pick up something else, but odds are pretty slim. Maybe they only buy one movie a week, one a month, but that was going to be the one. So as overzealous as it may have been, I get their point. I would have loved to see that too, by the way, because I love stats to see how fast those movies actually sold, if at all. I've seen like new releases for X-Men Days of Future Past or whatever, and they're like, by the time I get there, like 7-8 at night, there are a couple of those, and it's mostly the same thing. They're all filled in that end cap just by itself. There's no other cardboard cutout, but there are a couple of slots empty. I gotta imagine for Star Wars, at least half of them are gone. Maybe. And there's different editions now, because DVD and Blu-ray, it's a 3D Blu-ray.
Well, see, that was something else. It's just like, I don't download digital files of movies. So I'm just, like, curious of, like, how many, like, it's kind of like the rise of people, I feel like, buying digital copies because then they're able to watch it on their fucking cell phone and tablet, which, like...
That's sad.
Just an aside, if you're watching a movie on a tablet and a phone, you're fucking dumb. You're not experiencing a film the way it should be. Like, you're supposed to be immersed, not just like, I'm going to look at, you know, ant-sized images.
I did watch Hangover on iPod, and that was just fine.
Well, that's because it's a shitty movie, but well, that's just me. But anyways, like, I don't know how many people are buying digital films and more going the digital way.
Oh, I'm saying that there's different editions. Like, here's the DVD, here's the 3D, yeah. Blu-ray, here's the Blu-ray.
So I'm talking about, like, sell volume.
Right.
Okay. Or more people like, do I really want to go to Walmart where there's a whole bunch of people and pick up the DVD Blu-ray, or do I just want to buy it off iTunes?
That's unfortunately coming more and more of a truth. Sad, but more people are buying online. I like the movie experience.
Oh, yeah.
I like sitting in a theater and watching a movie that's good and it's fun. Not sit at home and watch it. Because I'm not one to invest a lot of money in a home system. I would love to one day, actually have a theater in my house one day. But until that point, I'm not going to go and skim the theaters because it comes out early on digital copy. Like, who gives a shit?
But, I mean, I'll be honest. If I ever get a home theater system, I will not watch Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure you will.
Maybe that's the movie that we should all talk about, is Star Wars The Force Awakens.
That'll have to be a whole episode.
I would love to talk about that. But no, it's just...
I understand your point, though, but I'll tell you this. I bought Mad Max Fury Road digitally.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason was, because I was living in northern Maine at the time, if I wanted an actual copy, I'd have to drive an hour to a Walmart, an hour back to get it.
Or wait 2 days
to get it. But I don't watch it on, like, a phone or a tablet or anything. I'll just watch it on my TV.
Why did you wait, though? Like, wait the 2 days.
Because I want to watch it again. I love the
movie.
You
wanted to watch it again right now.
I want to watch it right now.
But in this situation, he was watching the same TV he would have watched the Blu-ray.
Yeah, it would have been the same thing. It was still HD on a TV.
Yeah.
Because I had, for a while, like a 55-inch TV with a giant surround sound system, and I do have to argue that it can be just as immersive as a theater.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. If you got the setup for it, woo.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you're watching off an iPhone speaker, the headphones that come with your iPhone, fuck. That shit sounds terrible. I guess my end cap, it doesn't really, like, it's just kind of like more of like a one-off, just being like, I fucking hate this and not really going in-depth. But you brought up something about going to the Dark Knight DVD Blu-ray release party.
Did you think it wouldn't be there the next day?
No, it was one of those things where
I've gone to video game release parties. Oh. But that's because I hadn't had any contact with it before then.
Yeah.
But it's like Dark Knight, it's like I saw the movie in theaters, so it's like, why go to midnight release party for it?
I went to...
That's what I'm curious about. Like
the Borderlands 2 midnight release at GameStop. And it was really, really cold outside. So they, instead of everyone waiting outside, they crammed everybody inside. And the smell alone made me never want to go back to a midnight release. It was awful.
It's like going to Deadpool day one midnight release and just like standing behind someone and just like, do you know what hygiene is? Like, did you shower ever?
I think the reason I went to it at that time, I was staying up pretty late every night. I don't think I watched it that night, but I was up. I was like, well, fuck it. Might as well get it at Bullmoose. They open at midnight. Like, they close for half an hour and then open up again, or an hour. So I was like, you know, why not? And then I got it, and then I went to bed. But...
Like, I guess what I was trying to get is, like, I understand video games, because that's your first interaction with this medium.
Yeah.
This media. And so it's like, that's where the hype is. But it's like, with a movie, it's like, I hope you already saw the movie in theater before you went and bought the DVD Blu-ray of it. But then again, some people are like, I hate going to theaters.
It's true.
There are people. I got friends that were like, they got their home surround sound system and their big TV, and they just don't want to go to a theater. Although I like going to theater for... Like,
oh, yeah.
It's just, if anything, it's just more nostalgia. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I did that growing up. Everyone did that growing up.
I mean, it has a different feel of it when you get to a theater.
Mm.
Just because it's like, I don't have the internet computer just like looming to the side of me to where it'd be like, oh, this scene's kind of boring, so I'm just going to direct my attention and then just miss half the fucking movie.
Yeah, you're forced to watch it.
You're
yeah.
forced.
In a good way. Yeah.
You're forced to get out of that just
so
like,
many
information
movies
overload.
I was forced to watch in the theater.
New Moon.
Like that snuff film.
That snuff film.
Which they showed one night, which they should have not.
Should have not shown that.
How was it?
It wasn't bad as far as snuff films
go. The ending sucked.
The ending sucked. They survived.
It was such
that
a predictable
film
ending.
Was just sucks.
Predictable.
Predictable. The main character died in this snuff film. So fucking predictable.
So I, speaking of theaters, I want to bring up something for my topic. I was really worried going in. So every year, like, you kind of like anticipate the next year's like releases, the bigger stuff. The smaller stuff comes up after a while. Like, you don't really know what's happening until it's starting its marketing campaign. But so the 2016, I'm like, that looks pretty fun year overall. Like, I'm a big superhero fan. So August hates me for it. I love Marvel. I love crossovers. I love continuity, and Marvel is doing a good job in that. It's gonna fail eventually because there's so much shit going on. But this year I was like, oh, I can't wait for this year. And then now in April, it's been a pretty shitty year overall. There have been a couple standouts, like, in terms of, I guess, the more box office friendly, not including Jungle Book right now, but the first one really was Deadpool, and it was, like, something different in a sense of a smaller scale superhero film that, you know, I love the meta humor, too, so that was, like, something I really liked a lot.
I love the meta humor in Deadpool. Like, I love that. But I'll keep bringing it up, is just like Deadpool masturbating to a stuffed plushie of a unicorn is not fucking funny.
I love that so much.
Him seeing what?
It was one of those. It was just too over the top, too absurd.
It was over the top. The reason I loved it because they're fast forwarding. Okay, you've seen this part, and they stop on something disgusting like that. I thought that was funny because it was like you're fast forwarding the movie you've already seen. Oh, you didn't see this part. Shit. But it was kind of weird.
It's a joke I've seen before, though.
In a way, yeah. Yeah, I just liked how they played it off. It was, there are a lot of misses in jokes-wise in that movie, but it was just
Oh, my God. So, the three of us actually saw this, the first showing at Spotlight Theater, another promotion.
Spotlight
Cinema.
Please,
Spotlight Cinema. We
Spotlight
love you.
Cinema.
Give us money.
Consume. Buy concessions.
But anyways, and how when that scene came up where he like moved his sleeve and it was Adventure Time watch, and people were like in the audience, they were like, oh, Adventure Time, and I'm just like, so fucking what? Like,
I didn't care.
Oh my God, he has Adventure Time watch. That's
funny. Yeah, it was one of those jokes where I was just like, get it? You know what this is, right? You know what this is. And
just
that annoys
me. Adventure Time, it's random humor, just like me, Deadpool.
I think there are a lot of jokes. It was funny, you know, as dirty as it is, and as you know, blue as the humor is, it was so like widespread in terms of its comedic tone. Like, there were some jokes for those like 12-year-olds or people love this show, which probably mostly children, hopefully. I know there's some adults that love the show.
But it's R-rated.
But that's the thing. No, there are a lot of jokes, especially in the trailer. Like, the fucking trailer, that joke we always talk about. Shit, did I leave the stove on?
Yeah, that's the fucking bottom of the barrel.
Could have said literally anything else.
When it came to that scene, I hoped they had changed the dialogue, which
I thought
some
it was.
Movies do. Like, because I was like, you gotta change that dialogue. It doesn't work in the trailer. And then you see it in the movie and you're just like,
that's the equivalent of that's going to leave a mark joke that people always...
Yeah.
Well, gonna leave a mark. I'm surprised he didn't say that. Yeah. It's going to leave a mark.
But, you know, so that was like... I was like, that's cool. Good start to the year. And then... Oh, God. I would never... I know we fought about this before August, but I never anticipated to like this movie, yet it was worse than I expected. Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. It's a fucking calamity. And it's a slap in the face of everything Marvel's been doing in terms of continuity. Yes, cinematography is beautiful. But I get
DC. It's DC. What do you mean about stuff in the case of Marvel?
Because Marvel was setting, like, you know, we're going to take our time and set up these characters and make it more worthwhile when they go, come together. DC's like, fuck, here's Wonder Woman. Here's a clip of Flash. Jerk off. Get ready for the next one. Come on. Come on.
That doesn't, don't give me that look. That doesn't happen in the Marvel cinematic
throwing movies? A character in? Of course it happens. They're building a world, but they're going to have their own movie. But, I mean, like, the first five Avengers were set up first, except for poor Hawkeye.
Yeah, set up, but they just, they're just thrown in there. That's it.
What do you mean?
You don't see them coming off from their individual movies as different characters. As that, like, with a lot of movies, and a lot of those comic book movies, mm-hmm. they follow, like, the hero's journey or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They have their reality, then something disrupts it, and they kind of try to fight to restore their equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, in each in their individual movie, they grow from that.
Right.
But when they converge within, like, Avengers or whatever, you don't see them as changed characters. I don't.
With one exception. With your favorite man ever.
Are you talking about Iron Man 3?
I am.
Where Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark is supposed to have PTSD because he launched a nuke at an alien army through a space portal and thought he was dead, or, you know, like...
That would have changed me.
Kind of dead. But I didn't see him changed in Iron Man 3. He was the same fucking character.
So yeah, Marvel, to the, you know, as much as I give him credit, the character development, they cannot...
Zero.
No, there's
development.
There's character development, but what I'm saying is that there's not a lot to what you want for in terms of level of that. Like, there is some of that,
yeah.
But to have a realistically to have that character change in their arc in that first film and then go into another movie, they wouldn't be the same character. You're setting up. What I'm saying is, what I think they did right is they set up these characters, establish them in this world, and then put them together. Not like DC Batman vs Superman. Here's a Batman you've never met before. Let's show your fucking parents' death again.
Oh, yeah.
And here's
a
Superman no one likes. Let's have him fight.
I mean, I will agree with that.
It's just too much at too much.
I'm just saying, like, okay. Batman versus Superman cinematic universe? Shit.
So far.
Marvel cinematic universe? Is shit, but it smells a little bit better. Like, this is shit that doesn't have a lot of fiber and smelliness
shit
to it.
Shit's broken down a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, I could actually kind of digest this shit. Well, this shit is just, I don't want to eat it.
But, so that was, like, another thing to me that was, okay, so it wasn't, like, I guess it wasn't worrisome, but I guess I didn't expect it to be that bad. Like, I was going in with, a middling expectations. But then, some other films this year, I get announced out of nowhere. I was so fucking pumped for this. So fucking pumped.
Ghostbusters.
Yes. No. No. God no. God no. No. I'm talking about so far this year.
Okay.
10 Cloverfield Lane. I was like, okay, this is a cool looking premise. Here is the movie I liked a lot. I want to see that series expand. Well, no. They took another film called The Cellar, I believe, or The Attic or something like that. And retrofitted it to, not even.
I'm sorry,
to
did a you say attic?
I think it was called something like that.
I don't know how it could be called the attic.
It makes sense. That's why, yeah. But
anyways.
They retrofitted it into making it into Cloverfield Universe, which is not in
it's
my
It's not
mind.
In the universe.
Which is why I hated it so much.
And I hated it. If they would have took that film, I said this while watching it, and named it The Cellar, and didn't tack on a stupid sci-fi thingy ending,
mm-hmm.
it would have been a fine movie. But I feel the studio felt didn't have enough confidence in it. But they said, how can we fucking trick everyone? And to me, it's criminal and it's outright fraud.
Oh, yeah.
To do this, we're going to slap the Cloverfield name on it, which I wasn't even a fan of Cloverfield either. But I thought this was an interesting take because it would be cool to see these two or these three people in a bunker while that big creature's walking around doing shit, and it wasn't even the big creature or anything.
Mm-mm.
It was something. It was an alien invasion,
huh?
And it didn't make any fucking sense. And yeah,
so that,
yeah,
so that, and then I was like really excited. Oh wait, so that thing at the end of the first Cloverfield in the Coney Island shot, it was an, I thought, I knew it was an egg that landed on Earth, so they were seeding this creature to attack first, and then while we're distracted, attack us. No, it's a fucking satellite. I found out after. I'm like, this is even fucking worse. throw me a fucking bat so I can smash this Blu-ray when it comes out, because I do not want to see this again. I love the acting. Acting is really well done. Like, I don't think you like the overall. It was overall, you didn't like the initial first part of it.
Mary Elizabeth once said, "Call me."
I'm trying to remember which part.
You said you didn't really like the. You said the story was kind of formulaic or something.
I think I've seen that those situations done better in film.
Mm. Okay.
I mean, but it's not that it was horrible. It was definitely. I liked it.
Room.
Well,
room.
There you go. Yeah, that's true.
Being trapped in claustrophobia.
Now that I've seen
it. But where does that end? When I saw that, I was like, does this mean the studios are going to start digging out movies that, you know, they didn't think would sell to audiences and just start slapping big name brands on it and stuff and pushing it out there to trick people to go see it?
That's happened before, though.
Like, even if they said 10 Cloverfield Lane through Cloverfield, would it have the same impact had they not have put J.J. Abrams on, like, the promotion as well?
J.J. had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, he's executive producer.
Because they reshot. It's like if you direct the first episode of a movie, a show, the pilot, you're all of a sudden executive producer for the entire show's run.
David Fichtner, House of Cards.
Now, J.J. didn't have really anything in terms of involvement in the first Cloverfield. I mean, I think he produced it, but it was Drew Goddard and Matt Reeves.
Yeah.
They've fucking gone on to do so many great things. We'll get to those if you want to, but
I don't know who this
Drew Goddard wrote The Martian. He wrote Cabin in the Woods and and he actually directed it. You hate, oh fuck, don't even start.
No, Cabin in the Woods.
What's wrong with Cabin in the Woods? Oh my god.
I got bored of it.
Anyway.
I was just like, shut it off.
So, to me, it's like, they shot that movie. Yeah. Cellar was a shot film.
Yeah.
They shelved it.
Yeah.
And they did exactly what you said. Oh, let's make this, let's rewrite the ending, shoot a couple more scenes with Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and call it 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah. Well, yeah. What I'm trying to get at is, though, is like, if it had 10 Cloverfield Lane attached to it, would it have the same impact if, and they had J.J. Abrams attached to it as well? Would it have the same impact if they didn't have J.J. Abrams attached to it after coming off Star Wars The Force Awakens? Not necessarily for us.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
For us who, you know about, you know, film and, like, the players in the field or whatever, but, like, the average consumer, average film goer.
Compared to if his name wasn't on it, I don't think it's enough of a difference. Maybe a million or two. Because they really didn't put his name a lot in front.
I think it was more the Cloverfield. People know Cloverfield. They might not know J.J. Abrams.
I feel like they would know J.J. Abrams, though, before Cloverfield. Cloverfield was a long time ago.
Yeah, but there's people that hold on to that movie, which I hated it.
I agree with that.
I think they could do it better without found footage, but I liked the idea of it. Of having a new monster movie, you know, it wasn't just single crap, but remade every 5 minutes. Yeah.
I could go on and on about handheld movies and God.
So in that movie in the end just pissed me off more than anything. I think I'll come to appreciate the first part of it more because it was a really well done script from this person who never really, and I always appreciate people who start from the bottom like that. Like this guy made a couple short films and then this is his first feature. The Cellar.
Really?
And then they made it to Cloverfield, so maybe he'll do more. But
so, are you like a really huge fan of what's his name, Max Landis?
I'm kind of a fan of him. His work ethic. He's a little eccentric. I mean, that's underplaying it, but I don't know. He's out there, but he's definitely a nonstop worker. I wish I could be half the worker he was.
Yeah, but he just makes shit movies.
Yeah,
I mean, like, he can work all day long.
Chronicle isn't that bad.
Yeah.
I mean, what else has he written? I'm trying to think of.
Like, I liked Chronicle when it first came out, but then, like, it was one of those movies, like, the more I thought about it, I was just like, no, this is just kind of dumb and just stupid. It was something that it kind of hit.
Mm-hmm.
On an idea, like I like the idea of someone having a superpower, and being like an angsty teenager.
Yep.
And be like, I'm angsty and I'm kind of a god.
Yep.
And seeing their interaction, but it just fell flat towards the end. Like, it just didn't hit on those themes. Mm-hmm. And like, put away those themes just to have a fucking action scene to be like,
yeah, I got you.
Let's be exciting for the audience.
So, the antithesis of excitement to me, I'm going to get shit on, and I know why, and I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Because I'll defend myself and why I think this way. But I didn't really love The Witch. Now, you've seen it? August?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here's why I say this.
Watch The Witch.
So I'm a big fan, again, of this film being what it is. It is subverts the normal expectations of a film, a horror film.
Oh, yeah.
It is completely different than anything I've seen for a long fucking time. And it's very true to its time frame. I think it's a little too slow, and it's so true to its time frame, it's almost to its detriment. It's a little harder to understand it, but I appreciate it for what it is and what it's doing. Yeah. And the fact it's doing that, and the fact that it doesn't give a fuck who understands it or not.
Yeah.
A lot of old English speak. But well, the worst part is
true to its time.
Yeah, right, exactly. Saying, yeah.
With this dialogue.
It's like the opposite of A Knight's Tale, where it's like, here's some fucking rock songs. It's, you know, but I think the ending is what pissed me off the most.
Really?
It was so accelerated, and then it was in the whole movie, like, you're like this realistic, like, witchcraft, and then all of a sudden it's like, hands down, fucking balls to the wall, over the top immediately, like, from, it's a switch. They could have worked it up to it a little more. I mean, it just felt so, like, jarring at the end. Just like, okay, here's some floating witches and shit. Done.
But it seems... to me, it seemed logical, though. Because well, yeah. It seemed like the way that... like, maybe Satan would work in recruiting witches into witchcraftery is by isolating someone. Mm-hmm. And putting them in a position where it's like...
they had no choice.
Yeah, being like, you want to go starve out in the woods? Or do you want to have whatever you want and float in the sky?
I think it ramped up. When you're talking about the ramped up part, was he had finally isolated her.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And it was like, okay, now it's time. Now here's my final chess move. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
Well, shit, it's like, one of the things I liked about that ending was after, like, everyone dies and she's finally alone, we don't jump straight to, you know, her, like, being seduced by Satan. Like, he doesn't pop out of, you know,
yeah,
transform out of like goat and turns out to be this man in a cloak and comes up and being like, would you like to come with me?
Yeah.
Like, it shows that scene where she goes into that room and she sits down at the table by herself and she's just like, fuck. Like, what do I do now?
Mm-hmm.
Then it jumps to the scene where Black Phillip is like, hey, you want to be a witch?
I don't see.
Well, it's just, I don't know, I liked it for its evolution of that character.
Mm-hmm.
I think my issue with you not liking it is that you don't understand it.
No, I get
you. You know what I mean? That's the stuff that when other people are like, well, this movie was... like, when we're sitting in the theater,
oh, yeah,
and it got done, this guy sitting next to me literally said, well, it was a big waste of my time. Yeah. And I'm like, well, okay, you don't understand it. Same person
say that to my showing. Yeah. Actually, everyone else in the audience, except for me, was... and I'm not, like, exaggerating here. They were like,
wow,
this was really dumb. And they laughed. And they were just like, this was a horrible movie. Like, why would anyone want to watch this? And I was like, I mean, why would anyone watch Paranormal Activity?
But that's the thing. I liked that a lot of people didn't like it. I liked that it was something different. And I liked that... and the more I think about it, the more I appreciate it. But I don't want to watch it again. It's like Schindler's List to me.
Oh yeah,
it's pulling teeth. It's I rarely get bored in a movie. I had my head in the back of the seat a couple times. Like, okay, just next scene, please, next scene, or at least shorten this section. Like, I'm thinking like an editor all of a sudden.
In The Witch, or in Schindler's List.
I haven't seen that Schindler's List yet.
Oh, okay.
I heard some people die in that movie.
A few people do.
Couple. Anyway,
billion.
Billion. So, yeah, and like you explained it to me, if you could kind of rephrase that, you would talked about how the realistic, well, like, it was paranoia, hysteria.
Well, because it parallels two things. One is taking the, like, a witch, you think of a witch and you think Halloween costumes and like cartoons and shit, right?
Warts in the nose.
Warts in the nose and stuff. Back then, where this time period where this movie takes place, a witch was something that people really were terrified of. You know what I mean? It was like, if a witch wasn't just a person out in the woods that did magic things, the witch was a force of nature that would corrupt everything in the area and everything in the town. Mm-hmm. And most, you know, what they would do is mostly is corrupt and turn people against each other and stuff like that. That's why people were that terrified. And people back then believed that, mm-hmm. which led to the witch trials and shit, you know, and the you know, stoning and burning and drowning people, just because, which was often the female in the family, because if anything was off in the family or something didn't happen, the crops didn't grow, the female, the daughter must be a witch, you know, and they would bullshit. So he created that perfectly, because it made you terrified as shit that there was something in the area that was doing that. But what's funny is there was a witch in the witch. They don't, you know, it's not like this is obscure, like maybe there was something in the woods, maybe there was this. No, there was a witch in it. But it also establishes the fear and the paranoia that people had in that time period, which led to the witch trials and all that stuff.
Right.
Even though there weren't any, that I know of, real witches out in the woods doing that stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah. But he showcased it perfectly. What would happen to families? You know what I mean?
Exactly. And like, that's the thing, when you watch these other horror films, all the fear is brought upon by an external force. Whereas within The Witch, all the fear was brought upon by an external force, but it's more of, it was just like kind of plucking a few strings, and it was just like, I'm gonna hit this button and turn everyone against each other.
Exactly.
The witch fed on the infighting between the family.
Exactly.
Oh yeah.
Which is, again, what their point it was to do that. But I get it. I just, like I said, after you explained it to me, I was like, that makes sense, but I still didn't, I want to see it again.
Yeah. I just felt I liked it because, like, I come from a history of, you know, storytelling and folklore, mythology, and studying that stuff. And to see it on the screen, a real witch, I'm like, holy fuck, when's the last time a real witch has been scary in anything? You know what I mean?
Hocus Pocus.
Hocus Pocus.
Terrifying.
Sure, we'll go.
Sure, we'll go with
that. You haven't seen it? That's good.
No, the only thing terrifying about Hocus Pocus is seeing it, like, a cat get fucking ran over and then have it inflate back up. It's just like, that's kind of gross. That terrified me more than just fucking witches. But
so I wouldn't be surprised if it gets, like, you know, I hope it gets some kind of nominations for Oscars, just because it needs more recognition. It won't, but I'm trying to think what
it's get. It's too early in the year.
But, I mean, not special effects.
You have to be Wes Anderson with Grand Budapest Hotel to be able to last the entire year to get a fucking nomination.
Yeah.
It could get score or soundtrack.
Yeah, that's true.
It was a good
score.
You felt that score.
That's, like, one of the things about, like, the aspects of film and kind of, like, getting a grasp of is, like, the score. Have a shot of the woods and just be like, any other movie, just be like, okay, that's just a shot of the woods. But with that music, added onto it, it's just,
yeah, it would,
like,
go right up your spine.
Oh, God. Like, I don't want to go there. Yeah. Can we just stay back with, you know, the whole entire community?
The acting was so good in that movie, though.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the father.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, his family's falling apart. You can see him, like, his pain inside.
Yeah.
Oh.
What is your topic? Is it just about current movies?
No, it's about movies this year. So far this year.
So far this year.
Yeah,
okay.
And I watched Zootopia, and we had a friend who had really talked up Zootopia. So I felt like it didn't stand out in any way. Like, we had a friend talk it up. Like, it was one of his favorite movies of the year. I'm like, it didn't really... I mean, that does help get hurt, though. When you hear somebody say, it's amazing, go see it. Well, you're already not only expecting that to be so good, so your expectations are high. So even if it's like really good, it's still not as good as your.
Yeah.
It's like reading a book, and like, it's gonna be a great movie, or not reading
it,
you know.
I'd say when I saw it, my expectations weren't really high because it was Disney.
Mm-hmm.
But no, What I liked about it is because it had a different story than a lot of other those Disney movies. Like it kind of it took a procedural, you know, cop drama, detective drama, and I was like, that's really interesting.
And it's whodunit.
Yeah, like a whodunit story, like very Chinatown esque.
Yep.
Just being like, you know, something's going on with the society. You know, who's behind it all? But no, then the ending just turned out to be a huge, big Shakira pop concert. No, so and I was just like...
That was so bad.
It was like at that point where I watched it with my mom, and I was just like... I wanted to leave as soon as the song came on, but my mom's just like sitting there watching, and I'm just like...
Mom, let's go.
I don't want to be rude and just be like, I'm fucking leaving.
I'll be in the car.
Yeah, I'm going to be in the fucking car.
Really good voice cast, though. Jennifer Goodwin was great as the lead, as Bunny. Jason Bateman, hold on. And the chief is Idris Elba.
Idris Elba.
He's in three movies this year as animated roles. Nice. That, obviously Jungle Book, and then Finding Dory, all Disney pictures. Yeah. It's really weird, but all of a sudden he's like, I'm doing voices. Thank fucking God, because he has a beautiful voice.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. So it was a good, it was all right movie. Then Jungle Book is great.
I'm sorry. Sorry, but you guys can't say anything about Idris Elba. Until you see Beasts of No Nation.
I know.
Yeah.
Movie got fucking raw. Like, people talk about, you know, the Oscars, you know. Oscars so white and shit like that. Like, I really didn't give a shit about the whole entire movement because I'm white,
but,
I guess.
But
Idris Elba should have won over Leonardo DiCaprio. Well, I guess Idris Elba wasn't really, like, the main actor.
At least been nominated for something.
But nominated for supporting actor. Who won supporting actor?
Oh, man. Not
fucking Tom Hardy.
No, that's what I was going to say. Should have been Tom
Hardy. Damn it, I forgot.
Yo, fuck Leonardo DiCaprio.
All views are expressed by August Anderson.
All views expressed by August Anderson, not reflective of apparently the Oscar voters.
But here's the thing: nothing against Leo DiCaprio, but it was totally to me. It was like one of the. It was the pity award.
Oh yeah,
it was.
It was. It's just give it to him. So if people shut the fuck up about it.
Because he's a vegan and he ate a buffalo liver, like,
which I don't understand because anyone who would have eaten a buffalo liver would have reacted the same. So that's not acting.
No.
Nope.
Revenant. But that was last year. We're talking about movies this year. And, I mean, I guess it was a movie that had released last year, but it was an extremely limited release. And that I had seen this year that was absolutely amazing. And because I'm a hipster, everyone hates it, but I love it. Knight of Cups. Was an amazing movie.
Haven't seen it. Terrence Malick, though.
The thing is, like, when it comes out on Blu-ray, I want to buy that shit. I want to have it. Just because it is an amazing film, and I want to watch it again, and just, like, read up on a bunch of tarot cards, and their meaning, and how they interact with each other, and then watch the movie. But nothing will compare to seeing it in theater on a big screen, just because enveloping you. Like, very focused on sensation. It was just a beautiful ass film.
Yeah.
And it is one of my favorite, it's my favorite film so far this
good.
Year.
Good. Yeah, good.
Mark Rylance, by the way.
Oh. Oh yeah, Mark Rylance. Yeah, of course. Yeah, for the best part of Bridge of Spies. literally the best part of
Bridge of Spies. Oh, he's one of supporting Bridge of Spies. Oh my god, I watched that trailer like for the first time like in theaters, like it was before a movie, and I was just like, this looks like the shittiest movie ever. And what topped it off was like there's a line where it has Thomas Hanks, and I know people love Thomas Hanks. I don't
Thomas
like
Hanks
him.
Is great.
That's the first time I've ever heard anyone say
same.
Thomas Hanks.
You're so different. I love it. Thomas Hanks.
Oh, it's Tom Hanks, isn't it?
You didn't know?
When was it not Tom Hanks?
And maybe Bachelor Party. And introducing Thomas Hanks.
I blame the beer. But anyways, there's a line that Tom Hanks, which is like, we must hurry. there is no time. And I'm just like, fucking really?
Yeah, I really, you know, hear the intensity and the tension in that line of being like, yeah, obviously there's no time if you can deliver that really fucking slow and monotone. And that, as soon as I saw that, I was just like, that looks like one of the shittiest movies I've ever seen. And it got a fucking shit ton of nominations.
It's the Oscar safe movie.
Fuck Oscars, that's
it. Another movie before hashtag so far this year I liked a lot was Demolition. That no one has seen yet.
I haven't seen it.
Director Jean-Marc Vallée, who did directed Dallas Buyers Club and Wild.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mm. It's different in terms of how it's played out. Demolition is... It's weird because it's one of those movies that maybe at the end of the year would feel like kind of Oscar baity because of the performance, not because of the story. The story is pretty cool, and in a way that it's like this guy loses his wife first 5 minutes of the movie, and you know, it turns out he really didn't love her. He didn't know what he felt with her, and he felt as if he was kind of like in shock for a while. He kind of just started demolishing things and just acting completely different than what he had done before. And it's kind of like, it's a really cool movie. I'm trying not to...
I mean, you can spoil the shit out of it. I don't really care, because honestly, I don't really want to see it. I wanted to see it because of Jake Gyllenhaal.
Which I think...
Because I love him. Like...
Yeah.
Especially after, like, Nightcrawler. Like,
oh, God, Nightcrawler.
And seeing what... the potential of his acting, like, does a great job. But... I mean, he also did Prince of Persia. And...
Well, yeah, they all do some pretty shitty ones.
Oh, yeah. Michael Fassbender's in Assassin's Creed, because that's what that movie's going to be like. Like, I want to see it Demolition because of Jake Gyllenhaal.
He does a great job. I mean, I think he'll eventually... He's just been doing consistently good work. I haven't seen Southpaw yet. I've heard he was good in it. It wasn't like a good story.
Yeah.
So that's similar vein. I mean, the story's pretty good in this movie. I just think that it's a slower film, too. It's not like... There's no action in it. It's not really... It's just more of a character piece. And the characters are portrayed really well. So you might like it for that reason, too.
Oh, I watched the trailer again. I did. I don't know. I looked past, you know, just the face of Jake Gyllenhaal. And I was just like...
Yeah.
I mean, I would like to see it just so we could talk about it, but I don't know about it.
But, I mean, those are pretty much the standouts for this first quarter of the year. I'm trying to think of anything else that maybe we missed. Ride Along 2 is...
What?
No, I haven't seen it. Ride Along 2. Yeah, they did one in January.
The Boss.
Ooh.
The fucking Boss. Oh, my God.
Did you watch it?
Listeners. Stop this right now. Go to your nearest theater and watch The Boss.
It's not in there anymore.
Oh, it's not? Because it's so shitty? Oh, okay. I'm trying to think of some... Eye in the Sky. Like, I'm on the fence to even, like, include it in this conversation. But I guess we're not really talking about the greatest movies.
No, what's out so far? I'm worried about this year because of it, you know?
I'm not.
No? Yeah. I know it's early.
It's way too early. I don't know. The seasons of film are just so... It's changing. It is fucking changing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make that apparent. I mean, last year we kind of saw a bit of it where we had Star Wars release in December, where that's more of a tentpole blockbuster movie.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had all of these indie films. They were very powerful. That released in 2015 to limited release, but didn't get like a wider release to where like people like us in Maine would be able to go and see them. Granted, it was at a very small theater that is known for its indie films that it gets, but it still made it there. It wasn't stuck in Boston, New York, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know, the climate's changing. Mm-hmm. Like, those are, those indie movies are being released in January, where it's known, like, this is just the point of the year where all these Hollywood production companies just release their shit films.
Which I never understood why these production companies didn't just say, let's just save our hit for January. Exactly. You know what I mean? And just rake in for like a month's worth.
Honestly.
What, like, Deadpool did, really.
Yeah.
February.
If I was making a shitty movie. No, if I was making a movie and it was able to have a theatrical release, I'd just be like, during that time, I'd find out, what is the period of time in which there's a bunch of shitty movies going on?
January, September.
Well, I mean, that's changing now, though.
It is.
So that's what I'm saying, is like, it depends on what the year is. You gotta, you study the climate.
Yep.
And be like, try to predict where it's gonna be, and just like, I'm gonna release it there, and then I'm gonna look, you know, much better surrounded by a bunch of shit than rather have them competing with a bunch of better movies.
So I'm hopeful. I mean, like, I haven't seen it yet. Midnight Special is out. I love Jeff Nichols. I still do. I love Jeff Nichols, and I love the idea of him doing a sci-fi film.
Yeah.
That's cool to me. Whether or not it's good.
What else did he do with Mud?
Mud, Take Shelter, which is fucking amazing. Yes. If you haven't seen it, Michael Shannon is
yo, him and Michael Shannon.
Oh yeah,
they're the time. Well, I guess Michael Shannon wasn't in Mud.
Shotgun Stories too. I haven't seen that one yet. That was one of their first collaborations.
Yeah.
But then there are movies like A Monster Calls. Did you see the trailer for that? That's out later this year. What? So it has a vein of the fantastical adventure, like Big Fish. Mm-hmm. It's about this boy who befriends like this old ancient tree. It's 1,000 years old. Okay. Voiced by Liam Neeson. Really weird, but it looks so cool. It looks like a fun time. Like, it has that, like I said, it has that like childhood spirit to it. Why are you making a hipster face at that?
I'm making a disgust face. Like,
I didn't recognize it was Liam Neeson at first.
That's because Liam Neeson.
What does that mean?
Liam Neeson.
You're saying he's a chameleon?
Fucking overrated. Overrated. He's not the greatest thing.
Can we check the tapes? Just so you can hear what you said?
Yeah, go ahead. Liam Neeson, fucking overrated. He's not.
I'm not saying he's...
You know, you want to talk about an actor that doesn't have range.
But I said you couldn't recognize it was him, and you're like, oh, that's because it's Liam Neeson. Meaning he's good. You fuck.
Me fuck.
Flip your chair over now. No, I think it's not like him to do that kind of thing, I mean, except for Aslan, the crap. But...
As...
He's a Lion in Narnia.
Oh! Okay, yeah.
But, it looks like a cool film. It's like a smaller scale film. I'm excited for it. So.
I'm excited for Nice Guys.
Oh, hell yeah. That's May.
That's the next one, I think, that's gonna...
Yeah, what? Nice Guys, Shane Black.
Russell Crowe, your favorite guy, Ryan Gosling, Jesus Christ! I thought you said Night Skies, and I was like, "What the fuck is Night Skies?"
I saw your eyes; you're trying to like piece together. Like, what? Did I hear about this?
It's the most sci-fi movie.
Night Skies, the most independent movie ever made. It's just 2 hours of the sky,
shot all natural lighting at night. It's all improvised dialogue. Look at that sky. I know, it's great, right?
You're taking a shit on Nine of Cups, because that's what...
Really? It's improvised?
Yeah. Eek. No. No. No, here goes for our third, like, hopeful, you know, advertising promotion piece.
Nine of Cups.
Film Comment. Your magazine is amazing. They had an interview with Albert Fisk, who's the sound designer for Eraserhead.
Okay.
Anyways, he's been in the business for quite a while.
Is he still alive?
He was the production designer for Nine of Cups.
Okay.
And they had a little interview with him about production design. He talked about how, like, they would go to a location and they'd be like, okay, you know, we like this location, don't necessarily know what is gonna all occur in this movie, we'll just kind of think of it up on the spot. And, like, while that's kind of, like, going on, or they go to this spot where the general location, Albert Fisk would, like, maybe it's Jack Fisk. I don't know why I said Albert fucking Fisk. But anyways, Jack Fisk, he would go off and look around in the surrounding area and be like, this looks like something that would be kind of like beautifully shot and would take like Terrence Malick and be like, you know, hey, look at this. This is kind of beautiful. And you'd be like, yeah, I'm digging this. And then they would just shoot a fucking scene there.
Cool.
Like, that's awesome. Like, having that free form, like, jazz.
Yeah.
Within film. I don't know what... Yeah, you guys are talking about Nice Guys. But Nice Guys, yes.
Nice Guys.
Fucking excited for Nice Guys. I was telling these guys that recently, yesterday, spent $86 on Blu-rays, which is not very normal for me. I bought Calvary, which I watched. Amazing. Bought Tokyo Story, which is my first... can't remember the first name, but Ozu, a Japanese director. He's kind of like one of those where it's a very slow-burning slice of life. Ghost in the Shell, one of my favorite anime movies. And Lost River, Ryan Gosling's directorial debut. I have previously watched this movie. It's not the greatest film ever made, but I have a huge man crush. Actually, no, it's just not even a man crush. It's a straight up crush on Ryan Gosling. Call me. But anyways, I had to buy this movie on Blu-ray just cause it's actually, you guys like Drive?
Of course. Yep.
You like Nicholas Winding Refn? Mm-hmm. Only God Forgives?
Yeah. Oh my God, his new one looks great.
Neon Demon.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
But anyways, Ryan Gosling, you could definitely see his influence, Nicholas Winden Refn's influence on Ryan Gosling in this movie. Like, it has that color, that pop, visually striking, and I love it. Even though when it premiered, I think at like Cannes or Sundance, everyone left the theater. They walked out because they hated it, but I don't care. But I'm excited for the Nice Guys. I was just a little aside, me boy crushing on Ryan Gosling over here. Nice Guys looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I got rid of a movie today to these two gentlemen, Jamie and John, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is directed by
Shane Black.
That's
where I thought you were going to go with this whole thing, tangent. Yes. I'm like, what the fuck, Ryan Gosling?
Shane Black.
Fuck him.
Like, it's weird.
Let's wait for it.
It's so freaking weird because it's like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is written, directed by the same guy. Here I'm excited for the other Nice Guys, but Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, I fucking hate it. And I think it's because of one character.
Let me guess. Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr.
That'll be a whole other episode.
No, oh God, I can go on and on.
But we need to end it this one, I
think. Yep. Please, God, I got pissed. I'm glad that was added on the podcast.
Oh, we're gonna delete it.
No, keep it.
Right. We're gonna censor
August.
Censor August at every turn.